Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers, Communications Director here at the South Carolina State Library, and I am so happy to have with us today two really enthusiastic and energetic folks. And by the way, this is Monday morning we're recording this, so they're great to be here on a Monday morning. But I'm talking to Don Daria. So I knew I was going to say that right, wrong, didn't I? It's Don Daria.
Daria,
thank you. See, that's all fits in with the, you know. And I'm also here with Paul Miller, and they're with...
It's Mamiller.
Mamiller. Thank you for that clarification. And so that's Don Daria and Paul Miller. How's that?
Great.
Much better. Okay. And they're with Flow Circus, and it's got, that's such a neat name. Can you introduce yourselves and talk to us about Flow Circus and maybe how you came up with that name?
Sure. Well, I'm Paul Miller, obviously the male voice. And so Flow Circus, the name, it was born out of back in the late 90s when I first started really getting into juggling. I was hanging out with a lot of artists, a lot of other performers of sorts. There were musicians and painters. And we went to a show, and it was neat because the musicians were playing the music and the painters were up on stage painting, and I was sort of the guy that liked to juggle, so I was on stage juggling. And we're all kind of sharing this sort of shared flow, this really cool groove. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fun show. It was in Waltham, Massachusetts. And after the show, somebody came up and said, "That was really great. It was an immersive experience. It was like a circus." And I reflected on that, and I thought, well, you know, it was like a circus, and we're all bringing in our individual strengths and passions, mm-hmm. but we're all connected in this shared experience, this experience of flow. Mm-hmm. And this was shortly after I read Flow by Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi. And so...
Say that fast five times.
Yeah, right?
it took a long time for us to be able to pronounce the Csikszentmihalyi. Somebody gave, you know, taught us finally, but yeah. Such a seminal work for us in terms of his research really looking at what that state of being so engaged in activity that you lose track of time, you lose self-consciousness, you're just so engaged, whether it's sports, whether it's arts, whether whatever your form of flow is.
Okay.
Yeah, so somebody said that was like a circus, and I reflected and figured, yeah, we're all connected through this shared flow experience, and so it just came to me, Flow Circus, and that was, I guess in 1999 is when I formally adopted that name, and it was sort of the name under which I performed as a performer, and a little while later I started teaching, and in mm-hmm. 2007 Don came on board to really flesh out the education side of it.
Okay. Yeah, because I noticed both your titles on the website. One is Chief Education Officer and one is Chief Executive Officer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We're married, and so I wanted to make sure we were both CEOs.
That's great.
And my background is education. When Paul was first starting up the business, he started full-time Flow Circus in 2002, and for the first 5 years, I was teaching high school, and then I worked at a magnet school in Wake County, North Carolina.
Okay.
And so while he was kind of getting started and figuring out where he wanted to put energy in terms of performance and teaching camps, I was teaching as well. And so then we realized one of the reasons why I joined the company was seeing him teaching camps and mm-hmm. seeing him having this positive effect mm-hmm. on middle school age kids, mm-hmm. teaching juggling, magic, and balloon twisting. I was working in schools and seeing that playful learning
mm-hmm.
that I believe is key to learning, no matter
sure.
what you're trying to teach, was getting pushed out.
Yeah.
And so having opportunity to be able to bring tools to, at that time we were focused on tweens and teens, but now we're focusing more on adults because it turns out adults need it too.
Well, yeah, desperately. I mean, you see some folks who, you know, maybe feel really bogged down in their work, and if they get an opportunity to play and to learn through play, that makes a whole world of difference.
Mm. It's amazing to see transformations happen when we have groups of adults come in and we start to introduce this activity, and you get different reactions, but then once they start participating, like the guards come down, mm-hmm. they're playing, they're laughing, and then you can tie the messages in. But mm-hmm. first you got to have them, you got to get them. And he learned that long ago with performance,
mm-hmm.
that first you got to hook them. It doesn't, you know, you can hit them with lots of content, but if you don't have them with you, they're not gonna remember anything.
Right.
Versus simplifying the content, but having it really be a powerful experiential learning, it makes it way more powerful, and people are going to remember that.
I learned a long time ago, it's not about conveying information, it's about creating an experience.
Okay.
And you can't superficially create an experience. You have to connect with people authentically. And it's not about, I have all this information I have to give to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, we're going to have this experience. We're going to laugh. We're going to share this storytelling or this fantasy or this, you know, this framework of play.
Mm-hmm.
And once we're engaged there, then we can talk about why it's important. What are the relevant lessons? What are the takeaways?
And I think that's important for library staff because, you know, you think of librarians and library staff members who are maybe working with the public, they're all about imparting information, and it's almost kind of one way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get this flow that you're talking about, you know, you build a better customer service experience.
And that's one of the, when we've, the message when we do professional development for libraries that we convey is this idea of creating a culture of success.
Mm-hmm.
For yourselves as a team of professionals, but also for the patrons you're serving.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're coming in for all different reasons, but they're coming in and they're being vulnerable, they're stepping out of their comfort zone to come into this space. What are you doing to create a positive learning experience for them?
Exactly. And you know, the thing is, when someone comes into a library, it's a house of knowledge. They are intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
They may be, you know, unfamiliar with how the library works. They may not have been in a library in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the importance of the front desk or the person who is working directly with the public, you know, their sense of customer service is very different from someone's who's upstairs cataloging books, you know.
Right.
There's an internal customer service kind of thing, but when you're working with the public, it's completely different.
Right. And an interesting thing you talked about, the one-way knowledge. One thing we learned, we do trainings. We've worked with a couple of states, partnered with states to run trainings for tween and teen librarians to train them on the tools we use, on
mm-hmm.
the juggling and the skill toys, so that they can run sustainable programs throughout the year. It's not
mm-hmm.
dependent on us. Figure we can have bigger impact that
sure.
way. But what we found the first doing, kind of getting feedback from folks after the first round, was they were feeling intimidated about running these programs because they weren't really good at the skill toys. And so what we've built into now the trainings that we do is this idea of, you don't have to be an expert
mm-hmm.
to run the programs, that it's just as powerful for the kids to see you learning alongside them. What librarians are experts at is finding the information they need.
Exactly.
And so you can model along with the kids, oh, well, we don't know what the next trick is. Let's look it up in a book, or let's look online to see if we can find the video.
Or let's look it up on the flowcircus.com website, because when I was there, I saw a video about how to juggle.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, oh, that looks like something I could actually do.
Yeah, yeah, it's accessible.
Yeah.
It's accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really... You know, with juggling, especially juggling of all the skill toys that we use, that's the thing that people come into with this fixed mindset that I can't do this. It's something that they think is hard. You know, it's playing and throwing and catching balls. So a lot of times people are carrying baggage from middle school with it. I'm not coordinated. I'm not that kind of person. And so they bring to it all this baggage and all this negative, you know, perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And really what that does is it creates those obstacles that you then have to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you break it down, it's a very simple process. And so one of the things we find is a lot of people surprise themselves at how simple it is. And so what Don was saying, it's great when you can model that struggle. You know, we're not supposed to show struggle or pain or fear or frustration. You know, those are negative traits, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But to have a librarian who's this expert in like learning, right,
mm-hmm.
and finding information, to be vulnerable alongside the patrons, the parents, the tweens and teens,
mm-hmm.
That is such a valuable experience,
mm-hmm.
and one that we don't get practice. You know, we don't practice failing anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm,
we don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of the time learning to juggle is learning to juggle.
Right.
And once you can juggle, then you start learning a new trick. So you're in that position of learning again and struggling. And so providing that space
mm-hmm.
for people to experience that and have a positive role model
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is really valuable.
Well, it's modeling that growth mindset, that idea that I can learn this if I choose to put the time, energy, struggle, fail, pay attention to what's going wrong, do something different next time. That whole process is growth mindset. And that's, luckily, that Carol Dweck wrote a book called Mindset many years ago, and it's now starting to make its way into learning spaces. Schools we're now hearing are finally reading it, adopting it, and I believe in libraries too. It's starting to kind of infiltrate, but it's really important. If you know, a lot of the other research on grit and resilience comes from this idea of it's whether or not you believe you can do it, and that mindset is
right, exactly. It's like children at home, maybe if they've been told, you know, oh, well, you can't do that, or you're no good at that, or you shouldn't try that, or so, that really is ingrained in them. And, you know, if you have that as a child and you grow up into an adult, it is reflected in everything you do. So, you know, what you bring to the table is even trying to undo some of that if it exists. Which is important. One of the things that I am interested in is some of the aha moments that you have seen while you're doing training. And this doesn't necessarily have to be in libraries, but just what are some of the kind of experiences maybe you've had where someone has, you know, just blossomed right in front of your eyes?
Well, I mean,
I just want to speak to my own experience. I was not a juggler when Paul first tried to teach me it. I struggled. I would put them away. I had a very fixed mindset of, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. And I'm also the type of person that I want to be able to do it, and I want to be able to do it really well right away. And so I was not okay with the messy learning stages of it. And it wasn't until I was finally in a group of people. Not only were they learning alongside me, but there was this one woman I will never forget. Every time she dropped, she just laughed. And that created the playful space for me to be okay with dropping and oh, this could be fun. Like, that idea was so foreign to me. So for me, the big aha moment was that applies obviously not only to juggling. Juggling was a really tangible way for me to experience it. But then I realized, like, oh, this is everywhere. Like, I just need to be able to laugh when things don't go exactly how I expect them to, and then pay attention and learn what I can and move on. So that was a big aha personal moment in learning to juggle.
Yeah, and I think within the context of our programs, there isn't a program that we have where people aren't spontaneously high-fiving somebody, where people aren't like, you know, woohoo, you know, just sort of celebrating out loud. And that happens, you know, we use a variety of tools, so, you know, different tools kind of have different experiences. So some are, you know, the kendama, for instance, is a cup and ball, and it's a very...
And what's it called again?
A kendama or a kendama.
Kendama. I've never heard that word.
Yeah, it's a Japanese skill toy. Okay. It's that ball, it's got a spike and some cups, and you catch a ball in a cup.
Okay.
Or on the spike. There's versions of that toy from every continent for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. So it's a very basic tool, and it practices hand-eye coordination. For survival skills, for hunting, it's very practical. In the 1920s, it became really popular in Japan, and in the last 15 years or so, here in the United States. Well, that's a toy that has a very discrete sense of success. You're trying to catch a ball in a cup, you catch it, and when you get it, you know, the first thing anybody does is they look around and they smile, like, I just did this, like, I got it. And it's, you know, at first it's really hard, and the first time you do it, like, you feel really great. When we're doing juggling, you know, you start with two balls, and move up to three, and then, you know, once you're working on three, then it's like, how long can you juggle three for? And, you know, when you're first starting, you drop it three, four, five throws maybe. But when you start getting six, seven, eight, people start, like, cheering and, like, you know, smiling and like, you know, jumping up and down, you know, like, fist in the air, like, I did it. Just this really kinesthetic sort of celebration of success.
Everybody around them starts celebrating with them,
so it's
because
contagious,
it's very contagious.
And it's great. And juggling is one of those things, you know, of all the toys you play with, you know, there's those celebratory sort of experiences. But juggling is the one people come with so much baggage. I can't do it. It's hard. It's something for other people, but not me.
Well, there is this thing called hand-eye coordination that you have to have, you know.
Well, that's true, but, you know.
Do you not?
Well,
no?
Yeah. Well, yes. You have to have hand-eye coordination. But the misconception is the amount of hand-eye coordination.
Okay.
Like, you're doing great. You haven't fallen out of the chair. You're manipulating a pair of eyeglasses.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's plenty of hand-eye coordination.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the physical experience of juggling,
mm-hmm.
What your body feels like, it feels like you're walking at a brisk walk, except you have kind of, so that's a body movement,
mm-hmm.
but there's a little bit of throwing and catching involved, and that's pretty simple at its core. Tossing and catching a ball is simple. So it's just coordinating the timing of it, which we have this sort of natural experience with, so it's putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual amount of hand-eye coordination necessary is not beyond, I'd say 98% of the people that, function in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as juggling goes, a lot of people put their emphasis in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are thinking it's about the catches,
mm-hmm.
but if you have good throws,
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to catch them.
Mm-hmm.
It's oftentimes we're focusing on the wrong thing and,
mm-hmm.
and then throwing these wild throws that it doesn't matter how long your arms are, you're never going to be able to catch it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
A lot of times, and that goes, obviously, again, that's a transferable lesson to other areas in that, oftentimes we're focusing on the wrong thing
when we're
trying to approach a task. So.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the juggling goes, I'd say most of the failure to learning to juggle, other than not having a serious desire to, many people just kind of pick up some balls, throw them for a minute and put them down, don't really thoughtfully engage in the process. But it's not having a clear goal of what they're trying to do. They just have this vague notion, I want to juggle. But without having that clear goal, there's no clear path. And when you don't have a clear path, you can't properly problem solve. And so like Don said, your focus is on catching the balls as opposed to throwing the balls.
Mm-hmm.
In juggling, we control where we throw, how high we throw, and when we throw.
Mm-hmm.
The catching is sort of a secondary thing. We may or may not catch it based on the wind or, how our posture and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to aha experiences with groups, the one other one that I wanted to mention, and this was when we were working with a group of teenagers, and they were a group of at-risk teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And the people sending us in to work with them ahead of time had warned us about these kids.
Sure.
And like made it, again, the mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're setting our mindset going into this group, which
mm-hmm.
is the wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and they talked about this one girl in particular that was the ringleader of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And she would be the tough one, but don't worry about her and this, that, and the other thing. Well, again, we go in, we treat everybody the same, we set up this space for playful learning, and wouldn't you know it, when she was working on, I think it was when we got to the third ball, I heard giggling from her corner of the room. She was the hard armor that she had built up over in her short life had just come down, and she was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a powerful thing to witness and
Definitely.
See, and to see the effect on the other kids around
her,
too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And now, it softened her. It affected the whole group. And she was getting positive reinforcement. And who knows if that ever happened.
Exactly. And, what you're talking about is that kind of experience. That's a memory-making experience for her, but also for those people around. So you take that and you translate it. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, and it was a very visible, for that, it was an extreme case of what
mm-hmm.
also happens when we're working with all populations, because it's that barrier. You think about when we work with companies, it's, you have your professional person that you are when you go to work,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden you're in a room full of these same people, but you're playing together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a totally different side of each other because you let you down your guard and you're just having fun.
Yeah.
And that creates connection, that's authentic connection. It's
mm-hmm.
not... force connection.
Mm-hmm. It's really transformational.
Sounds like it. And it's when you come to work every day, and a lot of times you're doing maybe very repetitive work, and there's not anything that really breaks it up, and you can kind of get lost in that, and even in library work, one of the nice things about working at a reference desk is that you do get a lot of interesting questions. I think those have lessened over the years that Google has come along, because people tend to just ask Google now. But, a lot of times, people come into the library for very different reasons, but it's still very repetitive. So you've talked a lot about juggling. How does that translate into people's, and this can be libraries again or not, but translate into breaking up or their, I don't know how I want to say it, but their workflow? Does it make them think differently, or what have you seen?
Yeah, well, so we did a team building program for a small company. It's probably 80, 100 people. And one of the comments we got out of that, you know, the gentleman, you know, we were having a debrief afterwards, and the gentleman was like, you know, we're told, he sits at his desk all day, he's in engineering programs, and he says, you know, I'm supposed to stand up and take a break every couple of hours for 5 minutes and go for a walk. And he said, you know, when I do that, I go for a walk, but I'm still thinking about work, I'm still in that space, and although I'm up and moving, I'm not really getting that mental break that I need to sort of recharge myself emotionally. And, you know, maybe the walk is good and healthy to kind of get the blood flowing, but I'm still kind of in work. And he said, you know, but with the juggling, you know, I stand up and I'm playing with these toys. Like, my focus is there. My energy is there. Like, okay. I'm engaged and I'm focused and I'm working and I'm kind of engaging in the struggle and success and failure. And it's so, because it's so easy to kind of pick up, you know, stand up and just start juggling or playing with one of these other tools, you can kind of get that experience of being refreshed and taking a break from the monotony so that when you come back, you are refreshed. And I think something Dawn's spoken about in the past is that, you know, we have two different types of focus. We have sort of a top-down focus and a bottom-up focus. And a top-down is when, you know, if we're struggling working on a juggling trick or a problem, we're really kind of, you know, putting our focus and our mental energy there. But then the juggling also provides for that bottom-up focus, that, you know, idea in the shower moment, where you can kind of sort of be playing and engaging in sort of a relaxed, mindless kind of flow experience and let sort of ideas bubble up and solutions bubble up. So, I mean, that was one example of how juggling in a workplace really breaks up this sedentary, you know, at the computer kind of experience and creates space for, one, to let go of ideas, and two, to make space for new ideas to come.
Well, that's really important to say, because I can do that myself. I can get up from my computer, walk around the block, but my brain is still kind of thinking about that. Sometimes I like photography, and I will just take my smartphone and take pictures of something, and I'm really having to concentrate on it, so that's really breaking up. So I see what you're saying about the focus of doing an activity like that.
Well, it's engaging in flow, right? So for you, it's the camera. For Paul, it's the toys. You know, for different people, it's different things. But this is just one more tool to be able to engage in that flow where you're focused on the thing you're and lose track of everything else and allows those parts of the brain to kind of fire connections. And then you sit back down at work and the work you're doing, and all of a sudden you see the solution because you're coming at it with a fresh perspective. And recharged perspective. So that's kind of, that's the value of the tools in and of themselves. And typically when we work with companies or organizations, we leave the toys, either juggling balls or skill toys, with the facility as part of it, so that there is the sustainability element. We hate going in, playing with people, and then leaving and bringing the toys with, taking the toys with us.
I'm taking my toys and leaving.
And then on top of that, there's also that going through the learning of a new skill. We often, and particularly as adults, and even in education spaces, we don't go through that learning process a lot ourselves and step out of our comfort zone a whole lot. And yet there are all these people coming in our door that are doing that as they come through the door. Feeling vulnerable, stepping outside their comfort zone.
Because we're on the comfortable side. We're on this side of the
door. We know how it works. And so to put ourselves back into that vulnerable spot, that stretch zone out of our comfort zone, that's a reminder of what our patrons are experiencing. But at the same time, it also is an indication of, oh, this is where I struggle. When I am learning a new task, this is where I struggle, but I didn't know it because it wasn't tangible. It was so abstract. And one of the powerful things, when I was first teaching, I had Paul come in to teach my first year teaching. I was exhausted. First year teacher story. And I was like, all right, we're talking about the Renaissance. Come teach my kids to juggle. I just need a day of not having to prep, you know? And he taught them how to juggle. And I saw who was coming in the room saying, I can't do it. Or who was coming in the room saying, you know, oh, I'm just this or that, and had stories they were telling themselves. Well, those same stories apply to the academic work I was trying to do with them. But I didn't see it because it wasn't tangible. And so it's a great way to see, again, where your coworkers might struggle so that you can know how to support them. So it goes back to the juggling and the tools themselves, but on top of that, it's just the experience of learning a new skill and mm-hmm. reflecting on that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've talked a lot about juggling. What other kind of skills do you offer?
We have a, in addition to juggling, which is usually its own thing because it's a progressive skill. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we have a number of other skill toys from around the world. Mm-hmm. And those we can introduce all at the same time because they have a little bit easier learning curve than the juggling. Like you mm-hmm. can do some basic tricks with most of the toys.
Sure.
And those skill toys are flower sticks, the Japanese kendama, which Paul talked about. Diablo.
Yeah, Diablo.
Sorry, I'm talking about toys. This is Paul's area. He loves the toys.
I
want to
talk about the toys. So the toys are really interesting. There's like 30 skill toys from around the world, and these are all very, very old toys. These are the toys that we were playing with before electricity. You know, these are just simple things that respond to gravity mm-hmm. and respond mm-hmm. to spin and respond to balance. And so, like Don said, juggling and Diablo, which is looks sometimes called a Chinese yo-yo, which is hourglass shaped, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it's manipulated with a string on two sticks.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know, and those were really popular. They go back 2,000 years, but they were really popular in the late 1700s, and again in the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. The spinning top, the throw top, which mm-hmm. is one of the world's oldest skill toys. There's a chatter ring, which is a toy out of New Zealand. The yo-yo, which Don's, you know, mimicking, which obviously has a pretty rich history here in the United States, brought to the States in the 40s by a man from the Philippines, and then got that into the school system and really made that popular. Spinning plates, mm-hmm. which is from a traditional Chinese circus. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in the last 10 years or so, 15 years, the kendama has become very popular here in the United States. And that sort of spurred like a new interest in simple props that, mm-hmm. you know, spin, balance, and fall, basically.
Yep.
And so there's been a couple of different new toys that have been invented. And this toy that I actually brought today, the flop ball, is one that Don and I are really excited about. Basically, it looks like a ball that's been run over with a steamroller. It's
uh-huh.
flat.
Feels like a little beanbag or something.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the way you use it is, you know, you use it on the back of your hand. So it's a throw and catch toy that you use in the back of your hand. And what it allows you to do is really pay attention to the experience of gravity. And
I've already dropped it.
Yeah, you quickly see just
but
you
laugh, so that's all that matters.
it allows us to explore just very, very simple things. And in that simplicity, we start to uncover just a diversity of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know your listeners can't see, but maybe they can look online later. You know, I have it on the back of my hand. I can throw it up without it flipping. So that's
mm-hmm.
a flat.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can also flip it in four directions. And you can change hands. And then you can start to flip it, you know, in all these different styles and methods. And all of these particular tricks require a certain kind of practice and a certain kind of mindfulness to the simplicity of it's a mass, it wants to fall, but we're holding it up.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'm sitting here mesmerized because I'm like, how did you do that? Flipping it over on your hand back
yeah.
and forth up your arm and every
right.
And
you
could do it too, just yeah. practice.
And it's so simple, it's so nice, it's so soft, it's really resonating with, I mean, I love it,
mm-hmm.
but it's resonating with a lot of people, and it's just, it's a nice starting place for re-engaging in the physical world, and
mm-hmm.
especially in a time when we're all becoming so digitally focused and
yes.
screen,
yes.
you know, focused, to have something that's, it's just a flat beanbag, but just
mm-hmm.
sort of paying attention to what that experience of having a physical form in a physical world means,
yeah.
and reconnecting to that, I think is really wonderful. And you know, all like Don said, all the different skill toys. You know, the juggling is kind of harder, and then all the other ones have a lower barrier to entry. This is about as simple as you can get. And
mm-hmm.
so what's really resonating is everybody picks it up, and it's like, oh, I can do something with this. I like this. This is, it feels good. It's nice. And I have a place where I feel confident I can begin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's the most important thing, beginning, because from there you can start to grow. But before you begin, before you engage,
mm-hmm.
then there's just stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can tell you're both on a mission. You know, it's really, this is important. I mean, you know, not only for library staff members, but any kind of a workplace environment to, you know, it makes you feel human again.
Right.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. And that's, and to have fun.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah.
Too, you know,
life's too short.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, final words. I want to go ahead and wrap this up. Anything else you would like to say that maybe you would think are important to our listeners in library land or anyone else listening for that matter?
Ooh. Well, I mean, I guess for me, so you say, well, you guys sound like you're on a mission. I am on a mission. My passion is juggling. It's had such an impact on my life, and my fundamental experience with juggling was, mm-hmm. it's something I can't do, and then I saw a book, and it was connected to a set of juggling balls, and I got that, and I learned how to juggle, mm-hmm. and that was a transformational experience. Like, I can, and then I juggled, and that was the first time in my life where I learned that I could self-actualize, and mm-hmm. I was 17 when that happened, which mm-hmm. was kind of late in life, mm-hmm. but, you know, so I want everybody that feels like they can't do it to do it. I mean,
just try.
For the person that is apprehensive or has these negative feelings like, oh, this is something beyond me, I can't do it. Like, that is the person that is most important. And juggling, sure, juggling's hard, there's a lot of steps. Pick up a flop ball. You mm-hmm. go to our website, we'll show you how to make one. Mm-hmm. And begin engaging in the simplest way, because that's gonna change that person. That's going to change you, the listener, into a player. And me, I connect to people through this sort of shared common experience of play and juggling play specifically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I want everybody to learn. So I have an entrance way to connecting with others to play.
Yep.
So.
And I would just add, in addition to making time and space to play, whether it's skill toys and juggling or whatever it is that brings you joy, taking the time to reflect too. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we're so busy that, you know, a big part of our workshops is not just the experience of teaching, but taking the time to reflect on it and debrief on it, because we don't do that extra step, and that's where a lot of the learning happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's about that. It's about making that accessible to people, reminding people of that experience mm-hmm. of play, but then also let's how did this feel? Where can we put more of this, or how does this apply to other aspects of our life?
Yeah. So. Well, thank you both.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate you being
it.
Here. And that's Don and Paul there with Flow Circus, and that's flowcircus.com. We'll add a link on our Library Voices SC podcast page. So we really appreciate you being here with us.
Yeah.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.